Hare Krishna, you know, the last few times I was having problems, I found out it's just my phone. I don't have a good server, and if the connection's not good, it doesn't read when I put in the access code. So I'm borrowing the phone from across the street, from Baladev. Okay, so I'm happy to be back. This is practically one of the longest times where I didn't have a real steady input here. And I do believe that one of the successes of this class is that it's been steady. Anything that people do regularly, it's because it's regulated. You know, it becomes habit. It's just like, you know, people go to church on Sunday. You know, it's the thing they do on Sunday. So I try to keep this up kind of as a our kind of community church or, you know, whatever it is. You know, either you go for your Sunday mass, your Sunday sermon here, or your, you know, the Wednesday night that we're doing now. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Taksur Mulatam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha. Excuse me. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dati sa padantikam Vansha kopa terubhyascha Kripa sindhu bhayevacha Patitanam bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama Rama Rama, Hare Hare So, greetings from Visant Falls. I'm staying at my place. Excuse my throat. Seems like I have some cough. But Satru Marj lives across the street with Baladev, and next door is Mother Kalini and Sachi Sutta and his family are here, and of course, Nitai Pri and Jivan Mukta, Krishna Kumar and Janardana, Pasacharya and his wife Sachi. And in town, some people have become devotees that own the local, I guess, health spa. And because it's the center of Mantrology Records, there's also a lot of Vaishnavas that are visiting. Also visiting Satsrut Maharaj, Haryashva, and Nitai. Visited Muktavanya today, Kirtan Ras. And this weekend, Janavi stayed, Gauravani, Shyam Kishore, Kamaniya, Keshwacharya, Raghunath. So it's a real devotional presence. And because we live in the neighborhood and been interacting with the... it's something really bad with my throat. Excuse me. One second. Let's see how I do. Because we've been integrated in the neighborhood for so long, in fact, this has been the center in one sense. The yoga studio upstairs, they have the school outside. And really, you can see it had an influence on the neighborhood. I have 3-4 people in the neighborhood that come to learn Hare Krishna mantra meditation. So it's really nice. And then this weekend, Friday night, there was Premhara did kirtan and Gauravani and some other musicians come too that are fantastic. There and then just kirtan by ourselves with a fire outside, and so a lot of nice devotional activity, and you can see the influence it has on the neighborhood. So that's been really nice. Well, I don't know if it was the last Sunday, no, maybe the Sunday before that, I think I explained. I did a 6-hour Bhakti Center, a seminar in the middle of the city, which to me was almost like a milestone that here are these people that are paying for a course. And, you know, I explained to them even my struggle, because I explained that for years, I've been teaching bhakti for, 30 years or so, you know. How many books have I taught just in Vrindavan every day at 4:30 going outside, my room? I went through so many texts, and we've given over 500 classes on the sanghas. But the frame of the audience are people who already have that faith that, in this particular path. Or I go into the yoga studios and I present the parts of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness that's common to Eastern thought. Karma, you know, the body, yoga psychology, forgiveness, whatever. So I said, this is a challenge, because now I'm presenting bhakti to people who necessarily are not devotees. It's hard. You just don't want to present it as academic, because it's more than that. So I told them very frankly that this was my struggle, and I asked them, was my struggle devotion or not? And I asked that question to illustrate what devotion is. If my objective or aim was to make a mark for myself so I become more, prominent, I get more money, people respect me more, it's not really bhakti. But if my struggle was, because I worked a lot preparing this, was I wanted to make an offering. It's a guru in Krishna that, I really wanted to share something wonderful with them so I can benefit, then it's bhakti. So I made a format where I had about 5 or 6 different subjects. I went through each one, and then I explained to them that it was very important for them to ask questions and have dialectic, because in this type of situation where one is not exactly sure what the faith of their audience is, you preach to someone's faith. You preach to what person already trusts in. Or you teach to what somebody already trusts in. But if you don't know what they trust, you don't know what to teach. So you need feedback so you can understand what is their trust And you can also give them information and knowledge to develop their trust to the level where you can give them the information that you want to communicate. Fortunately, they did ask questions. I started just explaining what is self-realization and the importance of that, which is common, and then the various options you have. Once you understand that happiness ultimately lies beyond the body of the mind, and that it lies in understanding the soul, understanding an eternal, pure, blissful entity, that in ignorance is identifying or thinking itself an impure, temporary, suffering entity. Once you establish that the goal of self-realization is to come to that realization, to get an identity that's true to yourself, and a perception from the location of that identity that reveals what actually is, then it came to the question of what is the path. And there's basically two paths, really. There's Gyan and there's Bhakti. Gyan means to renounce the actions of the world and strip away everything that's external to the self and realize the self. And Bhakti is to dedicate the actions and thoughts of the mind to parallel the self. The self is the disposition of the self is to serve. So rather than just negating the mind and trying to come to that platform, you engage the mind in the activities of the self, which Shaito Dharpana purifies the mind. And I explain that the option of bhakti is the recommended option in both the Yoga Sutras and the Bhagavad Gita. It's the recommended option. So rather than trying to convince them by logic, you know, or something like that, that bhakti is the best option, I did it by appeal to the authority that people in field of Indian spirituality accept. There's three types of pramana. There's three types of evidence: direct perception, inference or logic, and agama. There's pratyaksha anuman and agama. Agama means verbal testimony, to hear from authorities. What are those who accept it as authorities? What do they say? Well, they recommend bhakti. And I explained in the Bhagavad Gita, when all the paths of self-realization are mentioned in yoga, the conclusion of that section, the first six chapters, says, Yogi nam api sarve sham magyatena taratmanam shradhavam bhajate yomam samet. Of all yogis, one who worships me with faith and devotion is the highest of all. Say, why is it the highest of all? Even from the standpoint of yoga, which means to fix the mind on a particular object, if the object is God, in the form of mantra, then the advantage of that meditation is that you have a relationship with the object of your meditation, and the consciousness flows naturally to to the object of your love. And the object of your love is not just a meditational prop. It is the divine absolute reality which can reciprocate and remove the obstacles to the awakening of pure consciousness, because those obstacles are under the control and have been put there by the divine. So advantageous, and I also went through the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, how it recommends. I even read from the commentaries, the commentators who talk about mercy, and simply by the yogi's longing, God reciprocates and perfection is there. So I established it along those bases, and then I discussed what is bhakti. And I wanted to really be able to communicate it to people who don't have much understanding of it. So I was just all week before that. I went like a little, every morning for 3 hours, I would just go through different books. And I really found the most helpful presentation of bhakti was in Jiva Dharma, the first chapter by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because three things have to be reconciled when you describe bhakti. You have to reconcile, one, that it's the inherent nature of the self. You have to reconcile the fact that it's a practice. And you have to reconcile the fact that it's considered an energy of God that's external to the self. Those three things. Bhakti is presented as one's eternal nature. Bhakti is presented as a particular practice that one does. And bhakti is presented as the essence of God's bliss potency. So which is it? And I was just thinking when I read it, my God, you know, I've been studying this for 40 years. You know, now I have to present bhakti, now I have to find out what it is. So very nice. And the way I present it, I think the people were satisfied. I said, first of all, bhakti is the eternal nature of the soul. Or at least it's the disposition to serve. And when the disposition to serve is directed towards the complete and perfect object of service, that's bhakti. When the disposition to serve comes to the platform of love, that's bhakti. The nature of the soul. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives such a nice example. He describes, just like liquidity is the nature of water, but if water is frozen, then the nature is changed. Liquidity is no longer there. But liquidity is still lying inherent in ice, which will again manifest as liquidity when the proper conditions come. Beautiful analogy of bhakti. So our disposition is to serve, even though we're engrossed in the bodily and mental conception of life, which is to enjoy and control rather than serve. So bhakti is the conditions that change the distorted self to the pure self. And what is those conditions? It's acts of devotion or objects of devotion. Acts or objects of devotion. Acts of devotion. Because, and basically, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that every object has a vastu. So the vastu of objects of devotion, it's shakti. Now, every object which is a vastu has a shakti or potency. So the potency of devotion, the potency of an object, an act of devotion, is bhakti. It melts the distorted self. It brings it back to its original nature. And acts of devotion imply meditation on objects of devotion. Really, acts of devotion are different ways to associate with the divine. So another way to look at it is when your activities parallel the nature of the soul, that's bhakti. And what's the nature of the soul? To serve God, to do activities with the intention of pleasing God. With the intention of pleasing God without any other desire. That's what the soul is. And when you act on that platform, the consciousness becomes fixed on Krishna. And the natural devotion of the soul comes out. And Prabhupada gave it as such a simple example as a child walking. The walking capacity is within the child. The walking capacity is within the child. But when the walking capacity, when the child tries to walk, that capacity comes. So when we try to serve Krishna, the natural capacity to serve. So hopefully I said that in simple ways, but it took me like maybe 20 hours of study and trying to figure that. And then just after describing what is bhakti, then I described the practices of bhakti and how each practice focuses the mind on Krishna and what the practices are composed of and why kirtan is the most effective practice. And then the second half of the class, we just practiced. We read Prabhupada's books. We wrote on Prabhupada's books. We discussed them beyond birth and death. Lakshmi Nisringa did kirtan, and I taught my japa meditation as a way of entering the holy name, which I share with others. And it was a very blissful experience. And then the six exchanges of love. So Kali and Krishna came, and he went to the donut plant, which this devotee Mark, the Chelsea Hotel, and he just bought a box of donuts, and they're the most amazing things in the world. And I got to exchange. The students came up, and this is a very, very good group of people. These are people that are established people in the world with good objectives in life. It's wonderful. Then when I took the break in between the 2-3 hour sessions, I went over to the Chelsea Hotel. I was mind blown. The place was packed and packed and packed and packed. But the line was moving, and I was looking at the tables, and there was everything from businessmen to punks, you know, from Republicans to Democrats, you know. I mean, there was a range of all types of people. Everyone likes those donuts. And I thought maybe in 1 hour they probably had more people than were coming to the Bhakti Cafe in a week, really. Not criticizing that, but it was just, that's just starting. But it was just amazing. So I got the phone, and I was with someone who knew his phone. I called him up. I said, good work. Okay, now my next, the nature of this class is to share what I'm studying. And I am doing a lot of studying, and the next real program is, well, on June 4th, I have the Bhakti Experience program. Gail, you're invited. Just call up Amia. Get the details. We have this Bhakti Experience program, which is just that people are interested in bhakti. It's not devotees. so to speak. It's just people who now are attracted in bhakti. And, you know, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Great prasadam and kirtan and just absorption and chanting japa together. And people liked it. So we're going to do that. And then the next thing after that is I was invited to the Boston Yoga and Chant Festival. And I told you, I didn't think it was a big festival, but it's the biggest names in the kirtan world and speakers, and everyone from Krishna Das to Sham Das to Radhanath Swami. And I'm going to do drama as yoga. And I'm going to do this original drama with Alex, which also includes Krishna Leela. So I soon should get the script, and I'm just going to have to be bold. I've never really acted, although it seems I talk a lot, so it's kind of close. But this is drama, so I'm pretty excited about it. I wanted to do something different, and it's great. I mean, you know, they advertise you, they put your picture up, and it goes all over, and that's how people get to know you. And that gives me facility for, you know, sharing the teachings that I've worked so many years to learn. It's a great opportunity. I don't think I'm the main stage yet, but I really thought carefully, if I'm just speaking and lecturing, I didn't know how many people will come. You got to pay like $90 for 2 days just to come and attend the lectures or something like that, which doesn't seem like that much money for these kind of things. When you think of the Omega Institute, how much you have to pay for the ecstatic chant to get in. If people would come, I could lecture on Bhagavatam. So I'm sure if people would come, I could do the Bhagavatam. So I thought this may be a thing that people would be interested in because it's unique there. Drama as yoga. So in the next few weeks, I'm probably going to share with you some of my studies and research and presentation on that subject. And as what happens is I'm going to have to give a TED talk, because if the drama is a half hour, I only have 20 minutes to talk. But drama is listed in the Bhakti Sandarbha. It's listed in the Bhagavatam. But after all the different types of mixed devotional service are presented, and he wants to give a verse that gives an example of pure devotional service, he gives a verse, which in the Bhagavatam, I forgot the exact verse, it says the four ways to practice Krishna consciousness are chanting, hearing, remembering, and drama. And I thought about that very, very deeply, the rich tradition in our life. And drama in this sense means drama in poetry. Because the nature of drama and poetry is it does what? It has a powerful way of communicating identity and emotion. And in Sanskrit, this is called rasa. Rasa is aesthetic experience, basically. It's that aesthetic experience that one has. So the aesthetic experience could have different emotions, powerful emotions, and dramas do that. Tragedies make you cry. Comedies make you laugh. Horror films scare the daylights out of you. Romance creates romantic mood. Chivalry, you know, creates some kind of spirit in you. So in traditional Indian thought, traditional Indian thought, they really honed in on drama. I want to present this specifically. What we're going to do, what I'm going to do with Alex, is in terms of bhakti. But the whole concept of poetics, the original dramatist was called Bart Mooney. And he, you know, they weren't exactly spiritual, but they had this concept that the aesthetic experience unifies you in a way that takes you out of the individualistic and egotistical experience. It brings you out of that realm. It creates a sense of oneness, a sense of unity beyond the differentiation in your consciousness that separates you from the divine, the self-centeredness. So they had a general conception of the aesthetic experience. Plato, he was against drama in the Ideal Republic because he thought it was an imitation of ordinary, of real life. But in the not your Shastras, the dramatic Shastras of India, they think that real life is not real life. In other words, he didn't want people to forget real life, and in Indian spirituality, that was the purpose. Aristotle also had a sense like that. You transcend real life, your ordinary life, your ordinary interests, your ordinary ego, that the fluctuations of the mind. There was a catharsis. There was a strong, powerful emotion that, if not perfection, right, was at least moving you to be rather than a participant in ego, perhaps an observer of the drama, somehow to bring you out of that realm. So there's a whole history of Indian poetics, but specifically in bhakti, it was extremely important. Extremely important to the dramas. The Bhagavatam is a drama. All the literature of the six Goswamis is a drama. It encapsulates, it imbibes, it creates a particular mood that's communicated to the audience. The actor feels, the audience feels what they are seeing. So basically, what is the rasa, the aesthetic experience of the Bhagavatam, the main Shastras? They were so perfectly composed. And there was a term rasika, there's a connoisseur. You know how to appreciate that. You had the emotional maturity to appreciate the drama, then the sentiments expressed in the drama would come to you. So in the bhakti dramas, the aesthetic experience was this feeling of unbounded devotion for the divine, really the perfection of Ishvara Pranidhan, giving your life, giving your consciousness to the divine. So the dramas were about the divine lila, which was considered the ultimate reality. And there's some reference to that in the Upanishads, rasa vaisaha. I am that rasa. I am that aesthetic experience of devotion, of the particle of consciousness for the divine consciousness. So these dramas, they exemplify that. They have exemplars, paradigmatic personalities that imbibe and exemplify the feelings of devotion. And what happens when you have that, when you watch that, when you see that, you feel that. And that's your spiritual life. Because in the bhakti tradition, the elevation of heart is the elevation of selflessness and devotion. And the mood of what they call seva, seva bhav. You see everything in terms of others. And primarily God, which is inclusive of everything else. You don't see things as objects of your own enjoyment. You see everything as objects of the pleasure of God in others. It's a perspective. So these dramas are made up of exemplars of devotion. So there's three things, actually. There's the exemplar of devotion, then there's the actor who is portraying the exemplar of devotion, and then there's the audience who's watching it. Of course, in this tradition, there is an ultimate reality of called Lila, and that's going to be described in our play, you'll see. But really, and what people would do, if you go in Vrindavan, which is the land of Krishna, I've lived there for 35 years. If you go in Vrindavan, the land of Krishna, what do you see? If you go during this month of July, you'll see maybe 100 classical musicals on the pastimes of Krishna. And who do you see in the audience? Elevated souls, elevated meditators. They'll be sitting in the audience. And what they are praying to become is exemplified. Voltaire said, that which you appreciate belongs to you. So they're appreciating these dramas. And those sentiments come. And not only by sitting in a drama, by reading the dramas, the great acharyas, the great teachers, they would compose dramas. Even I know one of the greatest acharyas, Rupa Goswami, who wrote many of the, he wrote a drama, and in the drama he was the director. This great spiritual, he was the director. And he comes out and he talks to the audience. And they're composed because for this rasa to this perfect ecstatic experience of selfless and pure love to manifest, there has to be the environment, there has to be the actions, and there has to be subsequent emotions for the particular mood of devotion that one has to have. So we're going to put on and wrote a drama. And it's kind of like a first, especially in the yoga world. It's kind of hopefully what we call cutting edge. And frankly, I've never really acted. But Alex is a professional actor. And with that craft, we want to tell original story. Within that story, it also exemplifies pure love. So if the audience could just watch it not as mundane or not as mythological, but as a reality of perfect love, towards the object of perfect love, which is called Krishna. What does Krishna mean? Krishna means all attractive. It's a beautiful conception of divinity. And the conception of divinity is that personality is more exalted than position. So the divine should not just have the highest position, he should have the most exalted personality. And the most exalted personality doesn't have the highest position. Because one who sits high to satisfy those who worship him in awe and reverence has to cover up his personality. The king doesn't exhibit friendship publicly, doesn't exhibit romance publicly, doesn't exhibit his childlike nature publicly. So what Krishna is, the concept of Krishna, is God in his infinite beauty when he removes the veil of position to reveal the opulence of personality. So, anyway, it's going to be interesting. Hopefully people will come, and hopefully we'll make a mark. And if you get a chance, you should see this drama. It's really nice. Okay, are there any questions? I went about as far as I can go today on this.